The following program contains sexually explicit material. Viewer discretion is advised. September 29, 1991. California Governor Pete Wilson vetoes Assembly Bill 101, legislation that would have granted special minority rights to homosexuals. Gays mobilize and immediately activate a plan to replace AB 101. Just one part of an aggressive nationwide offensive aimed at every segment of society to force the acceptance and approval of their chosen lifestyle. Their battle cry, we're here, we're queer, get used to us.
The homosexual political agenda is very aggressive. The outspoken groups, such as ACT UP, are the vanguard for the general political movement, which wants to change the moral standards of society. Since the mid-70s, the homosexual movement has been very aggressively political and governmental, trying to change legislation. They've hired lobbyists. Homosexuals as a class have very high incomes, almost twice the average income of other people. And consequently, they have a lot of disposable income. They have a very high motivation to want to change the cultural values. And the easiest way to do that is to influence and affect governmental and legislative and administrative bodies.
The tragedy of today is that most people in the general population do not understand what the homosexual lifestyle really involves. Certainly our newspapers, our television, our radio are not going to tell you. The young people in our schools, they're being indoctrinated in the sex education classes with the idea that homosexuality is simply an alternative lifestyle. Homosexuals are brought into schools all across America, successful businessmen, successful lawyers and doctors, nice men, and of course their whole plea is, look, we're the victims of homophobia. We're nice people, we just want to live our lives and be left alone. The tragedy is most Americans would be highly offended if they really understood what was involved and what their children are being taught about or what they're not being taught about.
From my experience in the gay lifestyle, I saw many things that we don't see in the media today. What I saw in the gay lifestyle when I was there was desperate men, desperate for a relationship, desperate for something to hang on to, desperate to be loved. There was a lot of desperation in the bars.
The gay movement today is very much threatened by the kind of therapy that I do, because the therapy that I do can demonstrate that people can change. And it's essential to the gay movement that it convinces American society that homosexuality cannot change, that a person is born gay, there's nothing they can do about it but to accept it. So when you have individuals who can say, I was once homosexual but am no longer, some of them move on to marriage, you know, and have a family, then that threatens the assumption of the gay movement.
The purpose of minority status under the law is to protect people from prejudice on the basis of truly neutral qualities which ought not to affect anybody's reasonable judgment. Gay activities, the homosexual activities, the sexual activities that gays engage in, are not neutral. They have public health consequences, they have financial and economic consequences. They are not to be equated with the truly morally neutral condition of particular racial or national origin or other status.
A gay pride parade should be a kind of social political statement. In fact, it's outrageously sexual. And it's always pushing the boundaries. It's kind of like in-your-face sexuality. And there's a flaunting. It's not just a celebration. There's a defiance about it. It's pushing the sexuality in your face. And the reaction that we're getting from conventional American society is against that.
The gay agenda today in the media is trying to put out a message that the majority of the gay community is a loving and caring and monogamous group of people. The majority of homosexuality, especially male homosexuality, is centered around anonymous sexual encounters. Relationships, long-term partners are very rare, very rare. Most people don't even know where these activities are taking place, and if they knew, they'd be extremely shocked because they're going on right underneath your nose.
100% of homosexuals engage in fellatio, which is either insertive or receptive oral sex. About 93% engage in rectal sex, which is anal intercourse. And of course, the rectum was not built for intercourse, and so when you carry out anal intercourse, why you manage to tear the rectal mucosa, you expand the sphincters in many instances, it's not a healthy activity, and it's because you tear the rectal mucosa that there is such a high incidence of disease in these cases. And then about 92% of homosexuals engaged in something called rimming. And rimming was simply licking in and around your partner's anus, and involved actually placing your tongue into the anus, and you couldn't do this without some ingestion of feces. Then you had something called fisting. And fisting involved about 47% of homosexuals and involved taking your fist and your arm and inserting it into a man's rectum so that he'd have sexual pleasure and you could have pleasure by inflicting this upon him. And then 29% engaged in something called golden showers. And what are golden showers? Why, a man lays on the ground naked and other men stand around him and urinate on him. And then there's something called scat, and about 17% of homosexuals engaged in that, and that was actively eating human feces or rubbing human feces on your skin or rolling around on the floor in feces, something called mud rolling.
Some of the places, for example, could be public parks in a big city where there's secluded areas. Homosexuals will meet and cruise one another and go behind a clump of bushes and have an encounter. This is very, very common from the people that I knew. Also, they go to public restrooms, such as highway road stop rests. They go to restrooms in malls and have sex. There even used to be a joke in New York City about shopping bag day. You would take a shopping bag and go into a restroom and close the door and stand in the shopping bag, and someone else would sit on the stool, and so you only would think one person was in there because the feet were obscured by the shopping bag. Another location that's probably the most prevalent place for gays to go is called a bathhouse. And I know when the AIDS scare became really prevalent, a lot of the bathhouses in larger cities like New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles supposedly closed, and the cities closed them down. But I know for a fact that as recently as just this year, I know people are going to bathhouses. And what a bathhouse basically is a large building in a very obscure part of town. It has nothing to do with baths at all or taking baths, but you usually pay about $12, get a little membership card. You go into a locker room and check your clothes, basically, into a locker, put a towel on, and you walk around with as many as 100 or 200 other people. And what could go on is, or what does go on is, they have a series of rooms, private rooms with doors, or large rooms with mats on the floor, or bunks and things like this. Most of the rooms are either pitch black or very dimly lit. And for example, just orgies go on in there. People will walk in there and have sex with multiple partners and have no idea who they're having sex with. And I know this firsthand and from the many, many people that I was associated with in the gay lifestyle.
The gay subculture is built around sexuality. So gay theater is about sex. Gay poetry is erotic poetry. Gay art is erotic art. Eroticism is the fiber of the gay culture. If you look at a very glossy, polished magazine, a gay magazine, let's say, and in the cover, it's a very sophisticated cover, and the first two or three articles will be a very intellectual, sociological, or political discussion about the gay movement. And then as you go in the back, you'll see all these ads and all these 900 numbers, and that's where the money is. That's where the whole economy of the gay movement is.
Studies show that male homosexuals average between 20 and 106 partners every year. The average homosexual has 300 to 500 partners in his lifetime. 37% engage in sadomasochism. At least 28% have engaged in sodomy with more than 1,000 men. Compared to heterosexuals, male homosexuals are 8 times more likely to have had hepatitis, 14 times more likely to have had syphilis, and 5,000 times more likely to have contracted AIDS.
I am so shocked that people today are so uneducated to these things that are going on. You know, they say, let's embrace Project 10. We may have a gay youth in our school, but have they read Project 10's literature? Have they read the literature, the organizations that are promoting homosexuality? And would you, as a parent, would you be accepting of your son following this literature that tells him to go masturbate with other men, to go express himself sexually with pornography? That's exactly the type of literature these organizations are handing your children in school.
One of the most carefully kept secrets in America today is the Young Man's Health Study, which was recently carried out, actually released in 1992 in San Francisco. It was carried out by the Department of Public Health, where they got young boys just entering the homosexual lifestyle, being actively recruited out of our homes, out of our schools today. And of those young boys, ages 15 to 19, who have all the education in the world, who've been told over and over again the dangers of homosexuals' practices and have been indoctrinated in safe sex, of that group, 10 to 12% are already HIV positive, 26% are hepatitis B positive, and those who have HIV disease are going to die.
Homosexuals have a long history of focusing on youth. The North American Man-Boy Love Association has worked for 2 decades to abolish age of consent laws so that adult males can legally solicit sex from boys.
Let's consider the adolescent, the 13, 14, 15-year-old kid who thinks he's homosexual. Okay, now, to think one is homosexual or to feel homosexual feelings in adolescence is very natural. It happens very, very frequently with many people who eventually become heterosexual. Okay. But there are programs, counseling programs today around the country. In California, it's called Project 10. Okay, but there are many such programs around the country, which is very pro-gay. And so you get a 15-year-old kid who goes to his pro-gay counselor, who the counselor may well be homosexual. And the kid says, well, I have these homosexual thoughts or feelings or behaviors. Okay. Now the counselor can say, well, welcome to the gay community, you're one of us, which is what I am concerned about.
The gay community today appears as though they would like to discount the work of many popular psychologists, such as Joe Nicolosi, Dr. Elizabeth Moberly, Joe Dallas, that are working with people who want to change their homosexual behavior. One of the things we hear commonly is, well, if you change your homosexuality, then you must not have been gay to begin with. And all I can say to that from my personal experience is that I know what I know from my own life. I know that I was gay.
I went into the gay lifestyle right out of high school when I was 18, was in that for 2 years, and I was constantly trying to fill some kind of void that was there. And I was doing anything I could to fill it, primarily through sexual encounters and temporary relationships that did not last. And I just found that after 2 years that I needed something to boost my sagging self-esteem. So I became a female impersonator solely out of the need for attention and affirmation. I was worshipped by people in the lifestyle. But after 4 years, I would go home and the loneliness was even worse. The depression would be worse because I was getting all this attention at the bar in shows that I would do. And when I would go home, I was still alone, still looking for somebody.
On July 19, 1992, John Polk was married.
At one time in my life, when I was in my early 20s, I was stuck in that little boy stage of hungering for relationships with other little boys. The same thing that all grade school boys go through, but I was stuck as an adult, 20 years old, in a grade school mind. And I saw that that immaturity of growth was preventing me from seeing marriage as being valuable. It prevented me from seeing women as being valuable in terms of my relationship to them. I saw women as buddies, as friends, as though I were amongst them, as though I were like them. But I knew my body didn't line up with that. And so in the process of coming out of this, I began to see the difference between men and women. And I began to see the value in that and how my wife and I have a relationship that never grows dull. It never grows boring. I will never fully conquer my wife because the male-female relationship has a dynamic about it that will constantly change and evolve and rotate throughout life.
September 25th, 1992. After a year of steady pressure from gay activists, California Governor Pete Wilson signs Assembly Bill 2601. Gay determination has paid off. Homosexuals have won a major victory in their quest for the special advantages of minority status in all 50 states. The resistance of those who recognize the dangers of such legislation has been weak. Will the gay agenda continue to triumph? Will society be forced to surrender its standards? Will the tide be turned?
Authorized and paid for by No Special Rights Committee PAC.